Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri, inviting you to discover what research, projects and events are taking place at the University of Malta. Today's interview is a continuation of the mini-series about the Faculty of Arts. And I'm very pleased to have with me today for University Matters on Campus FM two heads of department, Professor Ivan Kallous, who's head of Department of English, and Professor Claude Manjon, who's head of Department of Philosophy within the Faculty of Arts. Perhaps I can start off with you, Professor Manjon. Philosophy, of course, is a wonderful subject, incredibly broad. What can you tell us about the department itself, perhaps a little bit about its development and the courses that you run?
We obviously have two levels, the undergraduate program of studies and the postgraduate. At an undergraduate, we cover the general areas of philosophy. It's usually students get a bit of a taster of the main areas. The way we've structured the department is to provide the bare essentials and allow students a certain amount of choice, you know, with regard to electives, so that whilst we're satisfied that they know the essentials in areas like metaphysics and ethics and politics and the history of philosophy, then they have considerable leeway in areas. Subjects we offer range from Oriental philosophy and Sanskrit to courses on the internet, which at the moment is the trend, in informational technology and social theorizing, social networking, which seem to appeal a lot to the young students. It's their world. So vis-à-vis the undergraduate program, the students for 3 years follow the various courses we offer. At the postgraduate level, we have three programs. We have two at a master's level. One is by research, full-time and part-time. And we have a taught MA and a master's in contemporary Western philosophy, which is both of these are offered at full and part-time. Full-time would take 3 semesters. Then we offer a doctoral program in a number of areas.
Do you have students at the moment at PhD level?
Yes, actually, we have one who's researching Oriental philosophy, another one who's researching political theory, Hegel and Zizek, and we have one who's just at the beginning of his research. The others have been working at it for about a year. On Iris Murdoch and virtue ethics. We have maybe two other students who are interested and thinking about it, thinking about pursuing their studies.
Let's take a step backwards from university and see which students are coming to university to study philosophy and where they're coming from. Do you have a prerequisite for studying philosophy at university and a junior college? Where does philosophy stand in the panoply of subjects?
Let me start with the junior college question. At the colleges,
at the colleges,
there's an interest in the subject. We're hoping to increase that interest because we've prepared a new syllabus, new syllabi for the intermediate and advanced levels, which are more interactive for students. It will enable them, even at this relatively young age, to engage more with the text. You know, we've identified readings, short readings for students, so that at least even at this young age, they would have read a bit of the original, a bit of Plato and Aristotle and others. Even at this level, we've introduced courses, we've introduced modules connected to cyber culture. Kind of the department as a whole is giving a little bit of importance to this to technology and this new branch, a relatively new branch of philosophy, relative because it's becoming more prominent even in the times of Aristotle. Technology has been was an issue. Now at university, there's no prerequisite to read for philosophy. We assume that students are starting without any prior knowledge.
So that they don't have to have A-level philosophy.
No, they don't. They don't. They don't have to.
That's
that.
Interesting.
Because yes, and it's so that we encourage people who might not have done their A-level or intermediate in philosophy. Yes, we're ready to, you know, start again. Assume they have no prior knowledge. Every year we get quite a few. The students, so to speak, who didn't go through the perhaps sixth forms and like this, and so our system helps also those who later in life decided they want to come back to uni and maybe study philosophy.
Such a broad subject, I would imagine the department doesn't have an awful lot of lecturers who are full time. But how do you cope with the breadth of the subject itself?
What we do is we have about six full time members. What we do is special courses. We use casual lecturers who, you know, who offer us a course in a particular area. It is impossible to do everything, not even great universities, which much more resources than ours. They kind of focus in, especially as you progress, maybe at undergraduate. And we're lucky, I consider we're lucky that the university and the department can offer, you know, for example, Oriental philosophy and Sanskrit or these newer courses. We try to provide a varied spectrum of courses which students can choose from. And it's funny, you see patterns of students, what they tend to like or dislike. You know, maybe you read the younger culture.
Yes, but you're catering for that rather more modern approach, perhaps.
At least for me, that's kind of how I'm trying to approach and how to attract students to pursue philosophy. One thing I'm trying to promote is the idea that having a philosophy degree helps you in other areas of life, in other one understandable concern for students is whether they'll be able to find a job after.
In fact, I've been asking the question of most of the academics who've been in the studio. Mm-hmm. So if you had a student in front of you and he or she wasn't quite sure and liked the idea, but how would you sell it to them, really, as an idea?
What you've described is what happens usually at the start of every academic year, when students aren't sure if they did the right thing. Well, we teach them a set of skills, how to read text, how to be analytical, how to write logically and sequentially. These are skills which they can use in a variety of jobs. On the website, I've just put up a little subheading on the departmental website. Anyone can check it, you know, with testimonials of ex-students of ours who are involved in other professions, from insurance to legal advisors to editors of journals. I mean, they can read, I won't mention their name, but they can read them themselves. Then those are only a few, but there are others. You know, offhand, I remember an event promoter. And they found that studying philosophy helped them in other areas of their life. So, you know, it's not like if you study philosophy, you're doomed to a life of unemployment. And actually, on the contrary, I think the skills which it gives you can help you, give you a little edge over other candidates. In general, probably the humanities, these are skills which students can acquire and which are valuable, because I think my colleagues in other departments too focus a lot on the work, the writing of students, and we intervene to correct them. I spend a lot of time, and I'm sure my colleagues also, and it's not just me, monitoring how students are writing, their skills. And I think now there are also departments or where students can, if they're weak in their writing skills, their academic writing skills, they can have help. I think Ivan...
Something the Department of English offers. Yeah.
So, and this is really a valuable service. Unfortunately, some students come here without, they're better perhaps in one language or the other, or they're not so good in writing. And that's a skill, something you can learn. You're not... Few people perhaps are born with it. But you know, so
something you could acquire
by the trying. Exactly.
What about research that you and your colleagues do? Or tell us a little bit about that.
It's crucial to all the humanities and to each individual department that research is the raison d'être. Otherwise, it will be more like a college who's just repeating. Most of my colleagues, I can say, are, you know, work on their particular areas. Obviously, my bias is towards the philosophy of communication. And so, you know, I try to keep up to date with all the latest information. Recently, I was in Turkey and I gave a talk on the relationship between tradition, communication and social reproduction. And now I have, I think like my colleagues, you know, have these little projects in your head which you wait for summer so that you maybe have more time to write the things, read and write it out. But the rest of my colleagues are also engaged in their research goals. One thing which I noticed helped us is as I told you, we're offering a totem, a master's in contemporary Western philosophy. And since we invested a lot of time and energy in preparing for this, that helps your research profile. It helps you, you know, because we want to be, especially since it's contemporary Western philosophy, we want to be kind of up to date with what we're doing. So I know my colleagues have told me indirectly it kind of pushed them into rereading their material and checking new. There's so much information, so much knowledge being published that sometimes it's a struggle to keeping up to date. But and you know, a couple from this preparation, you know, the glimmer of a future essay or a paper is on the horizon. So
I know also that your department has very good contacts with lecturers, personalities in philosophy in various universities. Perhaps you'd like to mention those.
Yes, we have good ties with Italian universities. In the past years, we've had Professor Marsonet and Professor Massimo De Lutri, who came over to monitor the work of the students. I'm also now introducing, I've invited English academics, and I'm hoping to have Peter Sedgwick come over to Malta from the University of Cardiff. Actually, Ivan suggested him to me, and I'm looking forward because I know he's a top-notch personality, a philosopher with interest in Nietzsche, and I hope he'll also give us our faculty and who's interested a talk. I'm also established contact with a new person to Malta, Susie Ferrando, who teaches at Loyola University in Rome, and at Stony Brook in the States, and she's a phenomenologist, and she's quite a name in her field, so she'll be hopefully coming over next year. I mean, one of the things which I'm trying to do is establish new contacts, because, you know, the universities in isolation, we might get just centered and perhaps mistakenly think that we're the center of the universe. So I like to get people, one, in a way, because it's promoting Malta too, that abroad they know about us.
What about your own students? Do any of them go on Erasmus at all?
I wish more did. I wish I could force them to all go on an exchange, but unfortunately I don't think I can. I urge them a lot. We have some.
You encourage them.
I encourage them, yes, I know. You have to be correct. because it's a great experience. It's a chance of a lifetime. Virtually they don't have to pay anything. They listen to other people, that's important. They listen to others. They see, you know, they meet other students. I think it's a great,
it's a great life and intellectual experience.
And it's good for their personality, definitely. You know, being abroad.
When they go and come back, you notice the difference from before they went and when they return.
They grew up suddenly.
Absolutely.
That's why I wish more of them. We have agreements with the University of Sussex, with the University of Deyes Elul in Turkey, with Vilnius, where they teach in English. So obviously, because otherwise,
no language
apart
barrier.
From the University of Genoa, Galloway in Ireland. So now they have the possibility. You know,
well, you just have
you
to keep
urge
keep
them
trying.
And urge them.
Thank you very much. Well, obviously, time is running on. So I'm going to pass to Professor Ivan Kalous, who's, as I said, head of the Department of English, to hear something about his department.
Thank you, Tricia. Well, perhaps I should start. start by indicating what a curious history English has as a discipline. We think that English as a discipline has been there forever, but in fact the institutional history of English is relatively young. It was introduced as a subject within British universities in the late 19th century. And at that time, it was essentially just a recasting of the traditional trivium subjects. So that was grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And what was done in the 19th century was that poetry increasingly was focused on, and gradually, of course, literature appreciation, as we know it now, was added to that. So it bears no relation to the complex, varied, very diverse map of English studies, as we know it now, about which I'll speak later. In the 19th century, the gold standard, as it were, of English teaching is probably represented by this wonderful image that has survived down the ages of Matthew Arnold, the great poet and critic, having discussions with Benjamin Jowett, the great Oxford tutor, master of Balliol College at one time. And that was the great Oxford system of the one-to-one tutoring. And it's so wonderful to think about that as something to aspire to, as it were. Of course, those are conditions that it's impossible to replicate in most universities these days, but that kind of high-mindedness is something that we can probably keep in mind. In the University of Malta, there was, curiously, some English taught in the law course in the early 19th century. Professor Peter Vassallo, a colleague of mine and a former head of the Department of English, of course, is writing the history of the department, and he's discovered that there was some minor teaching of the English canon as it was then on the law course in the early 19th century, and then English, however, really came into its own as a discipline in the early years of the 20th century. The first head of department was a certain Professor Eric Shepherd. What has happened with English studies since then is, my word, it's mushroomed so much, hasn't it? We now look at so many components of English studies, literature, linguistics, English language studies, literary theory. What we have done on the undergraduate program, because we're aware that there's so much to cover, is that we agreed that a good approach would be to identify five main areas for development on the undergraduate program. So we've retained the traditional importance of literature, literary criticism, and linguistics. All our listeners will, I think, intuitively understand what all three represent, although we could have an absorbing discussion talking about how those three areas have evolved over the last 20 years.
But sure.
We thought it would be good also to introduce two new areas on the undergraduate program, and that's English language studies, which looks at matters concerning issues relating to proficiency in English and how English is being received and perceived, as it were, in various aspects of education, various corners of education and the world and the island, really.
And then concentrating on here in Malta.
Concentrated here in Malta, but always with reference to how English as a language is evolving in the extraordinary way we're all aware of in the world as a lingua franca as well.
I had an interesting discussion with David Crystal.
Oh, yes, of course. He came over about 3 years ago and delivered a number of very well-attended lectures at the time.
A bit of a guru of linguistics and
the history of the English language as well. And we also thought we might add a component of cultural criticism on the undergraduate program, mainly because cultural studies is such a growth area within the humanities, and our students do find that it resonates. It speaks to them about how one can extend perhaps some of the perspectives and analytical techniques of literary criticism, philosophy, sociology, and so on, to the study of culture. We approach it from a rather literature-based literature-based methodology there, but it does seem to be popular with students. What we have recognized is that with an undergraduate program that has that level of breadth, it is then important to work towards depth within postgraduate offerings. It's increasingly becoming an age for specialists, isn't it? And while specialism must be regretted in some areas because it does, so to speak, contract worlds and perspectives and outlooks, it's also true that the increasing demands and expectations of professionalization in our world demand specialist MA programs. And we have 5 MA programs that are offered in the department.
Taught MAs.
And then we also offer a research MA track. So the MA, the taught MAs are there's one in modern and contemporary literature and criticism, which has been going for some years now, and it's probably our most mature program at present, because I think it's going into its 7th or 8th year now. And what we do there is to review the literature and criticism of the modern period and the postmodern period. We offer a master's program in English language, and this for reasons that, again, I think our listeners will intuit, resonates at a number of levels. English is such an important world language now, and the part it plays in our own national culture is immense. Of course, English is one of our 2 national languages. On that course, we offer various study units in linguistics and in English language studies. Together with the Faculty of Media and Knowledge Sciences, we run a master's program in English and the media, which looks at the importance of English language skills and perspectives coming in perhaps from certain theoretical aspects that we cover in English as a broader discipline, and how all of that relates well with the media. The students also have the option of covering a modular MA in English that allows them to, as it were, cherry pick according to how they would like to proceed, study units from the other MA programs. And then we're looking forward to introducing shortly a master's program in TESOL, which that's teaching English to speakers of other languages, which will hopefully support our quite important TEFL industry, teaching English to speakers of teaching English as a foreign language.
Do you have any PhDs at the moment?
We do have some interesting PhD projects. One of our students is working on representations of the Gothic in 18th century literature, always a wonderful topic. And she will be submitting her dissertation, I think, ahead of June, I would say. There's a particularly intriguing PhD project that has been submitted to us for consideration on posthumanism and beauty. Posthumanism is one of the emerging paradigms, I would say, of 21st century thought and culture. And funnily enough, it hasn't really focused on questions of beauty and aesthetics. And Claude will agree with me that this is an anomaly, because the great aesthetic tradition in philosophy and theory and so on is so great and so rich. So it's wonderful to see some of our younger scholars identifying these areas of inquiry and showing great intellectual worth as well as they go about it. It's an innovative approach. One of the things we hope to do over the next year is pilot a taught component to the PhD program, because the PhD researcher experiences something of the loneliness of the long distance runner, right? If I may quote the title of Alan Sillitoe's novel, it's lonely work. It's exhilarating work, of course, but it's so much better when you're working within a community of
so much doctoral
more stimulating. Scholar. It's so much more stimulating.
You get motivated so much.
You get
better.
More motivated. You can share your research with others. And I'm sure this can also be done with students from the Department of Philosophy, for example. I know the Department of Philosophy runs very good reading groups and so on. Mm. So I think there is an awareness in the Faculty of Arts as a whole that there is a very, very good trickle-down effect that occurs when the more senior postgraduates, as it were, share some of their expertise and some of their work with the postgraduates at a MA level and then the undergraduates. And one of the things that we try to do in to help postgraduates in their research, we organize an international postgraduate symposium every year. In fact, it's taking place tomorrow and Saturday. The topic the students chose for this year's symposium is With Feeling. So that has attracted a number of papers, and it allows them to learn the skills, as it were, of sharing their research, presenting their research in a friendly forum.
So, literally the last minute that we have, can I ask you the same question I asked Professor Manjon? An English degree, it gives you so much. Beyond university, where do your graduates go?
Well, they learn a number of transferable skills, don't they, on the undergraduate program. Important skills in writing well, writing skillfully, writing tersely, which is an important skill to learn, but also perhaps writing with flair and creatively. So that, I think, is one important transferable skill that they get on this course. And then there's the crucial, vital skill of critical thinking, which is so important in today's world, being able to detach and extend all the analytical tools they learn from the various critical approaches that we introduce them to. It does look like a good number of our students, most of our students, have good employment prospects, because it's wonderful to see that there is greater appreciation in various workplaces of the importance of good, strong communicative skills, and the professions into which they go to. Always, of course, perhaps this is something we should stress, it's a time when increasingly there is an expectation of postgraduate training on top of undergraduate training. So on the basis of the further postgraduate training they get at various levels and in various areas, they do tend to find jobs in areas related to teaching, advertising, journalism, management, PR.
That will make sense.
Marketing, yeah.
Well, our time has come to an end. I'd like to thank you both.
Thank you.
Professor Claude Manjon, Professor Ivan Kallouz.
Thank you for listening to University Matters on Campus FM. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il-programm li għadkom kemm smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsins Foundation.